I'm going to call this meeting of the House Committee on Economic Development to order for Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. And I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 69, almost said House Bill.
I understand that, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 69 adds broadband internet access service to the Public Utility Commission plan to provide access to low-income customers under the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program. This came out of the Senate Business and General Government Committee without any no votes, and also on the Senate floor the same way.
Very good. I have one person signed up to speak, John Cray.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. My name is John Cray, and I'm a program manager at the Public Utility Commission. The Oregon Telephone Assistance Program is a state counterpart to the Federal Communications Commission Lifeline Program that provides eligible low-income Oregonians with a discount on phone service. The FCC provides $9.25. And the state of Oregon provides an additional $3.50. In 2016, the FCC adopted an order to subsidize broadband service from the Lifeline program. The FCC did so to transition the discount from phone service to broadband service. However, the Oregon discount is limited to phone service. Senate Bill 69 would close this gap. For illustrative purposes, please see the slide to my right. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support, and I welcome any questions or concerns you may have.
Are there any questions regarding Senate Bill? Representative McKeeler.
Thank you, Chair Lively. Thank you so much for this is fascinating to me. So what I see there is it will, when it bridges the gap, does the money move from the phone service to the broadband, or do they get both?
Yeah. Chair Lively, Representative
McKeown.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. The customer can either get the discount on either phone service or broadband service, but not both.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great idea. Great idea. Good bill should pass.
Okay, I'll close the public hearing. Senate Bill 69. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 219A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 219A adds federally recognized Indian tribes located in the state to entities that can receive loans and grants for infrastructure projects from the Regional Infrastructure Fund. Came out of Senate Business and General Government unanimously. There was one nay on the Senate floor.
Okay, and I have three people who have signed up to speak. James LaBarre, Michael Mason, and Chris Cummings. If you would all come forward, please.
Thank you, Chair Lively, Vice Chairs Bonham and Fahey, and committee members. My name is James LaBarre from the Governor's Office. I am the Regional Solutions Director and the Governor's Policy Advisor on Housing and Economy and Jobs. Chris Cummings, I from Business Oregon, are here to support Senate Bill 219. There are several slides here about the bill and regional solutions, since this bill makes one modification for regional solutions. I thought it'd be helpful to talk a little bit about, in five or six slides, the high-level overview of what regional solutions is, and then bring it back to what Senate Bill 219 is attempting to do.
Thank you.
So, very quickly, Senate Bill 219 makes one change to one of the tools that Regional Solutions has. One of the tools that Regional Solutions has is called the Regional Infrastructure Fund. This is a fund that is managed by Business Oregon, and that we provide grants and loans to local government sponsors for infrastructure projects, including planning and design. The process for sponsors and their projects to access the fund includes engagement with the governor's Regional Solutions Program, which is located throughout the state. The change that we're looking to make to the fund is to simply add an additional eligible entity that we could directly contract with when a project has gone through the competitive process and has been decided upon by the program to be invested in. As of right now, the only eligible Regional Infrastructure Fund, or RIF, applicants are cities, counties, ports, and special districts. The private sector and nonprofit entities are eligible beneficiaries of RIF, but they have to have a contractual relationship with an eligible project sponsor. What we're looking to do with Senate Bill 219, again, is to add Oregon's federally recognized tribes as being to be able to directly contract with Business Oregon and Regional Solutions if that project is deemed to be competitive enough for that investment. That is, again, the bill just makes one modification. Since, again, I know the committee has not heard from Regional Solutions this session, the next six slides give a high-level overview of exactly what Regional Solutions is and, again, how this modification and how this fund relates to it. So the purpose of the Regional Solutions Program is it's all about community and economic development. It operates out of the governor's office and has a series of elements to it that really drive home its purpose. One, it identifies and recognizes the unique needs of each region of the state. You'll see here in the next slide a map of each of those regions. It attempts to coordinate state action in order to elevate that action and elevate that engagement in order to get projects done. Most of the time, whenever the state comes with coordinated action with multiple agencies in the governor's office and hopefully local partners as well, it usually elevates that project in the local community in order to, again, help it get it done. It uses people that are place-based within the communities across the state. I think this is probably one of the most important pieces that not only does the program recognize that there are regional economies and the locals that are running it, but also that the people on the teams within the state live in those communities as well. And what they're trying to do, right, is identify problems, or identify priorities, solve problems, and seize opportunities. It also works with local governments, public-private entities, philanthropy, and academic institutions all within each of those regions. And again, it's trying to do community and economic development work in order to, again, higher growth, increasing the productivity of companies, nonprofits, communities, and people that are living within it. So a little bit about the structure of it. I've already talked to you about the regions. There are 11 regions across the state. You can see them here clearly identified on the map. Those regions are set by the federal government. The federal government has identified those economic development districts, and Regional Solutions has mirrored those districts, as other state agencies have also mirrored those districts, Business Oregon being a very good example of that, again, in order to bring that state coordinated action. Some agencies, there's a little bit of a blend. An example of this is ODOT, where they're not living or they're not managing a system designed directly around economic development. They're designed around moving people and freight around. So some of their districts are a little bit different, but they also engage in each of these teams. One of the key aspects besides the regions, and I mentioned a little bit about the teams, are Regional Solutions Advisory Committees. These committees do some really core work in order to identify what the economy is for the region. And the way that this comes across, the governor appoints, so each region has a committee, and that committee has at least these five partners on it: a convener, someone to lead that committee, a representative from the private sector, philanthropy, and then members recommended from the Association of Oregon Counties and the League of Oregon Cities. Those five committee members can also enlarge the committee in order to take in really how the economy works there in that part of the state. Some more common other recommendations to committees are additional private sector representatives, representatives from Native American communities, and academic institutions would be some of the main ones that you would see across each of the committees across the state, but at the same time, they each have their own local flair, again, reflecting what each of the economies are. Those committees, they're doing a series of core functions. One is to set the priorities of the region, right? So they have a good understanding by having that collective effort, what is going on in the economy.
Going on here necessarily.
Yeah, this is a good setup for one of the projects I'll discuss.
Okay.
The other piece there, my experience and within the Regional Solutions Program, I was a coordinator in the Mid-Valley for more than 3 years. I really used the Regional Solutions Committee as a body of wisdom in order to not only understand the economy and set those priorities, but also to solve problems. Say, hey, we have this issue with this company and they're looking to expand, and they're trying to engage with the local workforce. And I know you're on the workforce board. Can you provide some advice here about how we can move this solution forward? And then the last piece, and considering reviewing and recommending projects, whether they be on the work plan or as part of one of the tools, again, just one of the tools Regional Solutions has is the Regional Infrastructure Fund. And the last piece, we've talked about the regions, we've talked about the committee setting the priorities for the region, and then so how the work gets done is through the Regional Solutions teams. Each team has 5 core state agencies that are required to engage within Regional Solutions. You can see those agencies down at the bottom. At the same time, one of the things that's the beauty of the program, since it operates out of the governor's office, there's really no agency that escapes the allure of the governor's office to say, hey, we have a project, and even though you're not on this Regional Solutions team and meet on a regular basis, it deals with your area of expertise, and we need to have a conversation with these other agencies in order to move this forward. The role of the teams and what it really does, it's trying to work community and economic development projects. Projects in the greatest sense of the term, projects being projects with a capital P that the state has money invested in, and it's central to retaining or creating jobs in that economy, to maybe something smaller with a small P of, hey, we're just trying to understand how the economy works here, or we have this event occurring, and we're going to need some maybe some special attention from ODOT about access issues, about getting people in and out of that. And even though that event might be a major economic development driver for the economy, but the aspect of just that additional state engagement for those 3 days would be considered like a small P project. So one of the realm of projects are projects that engage with the Regional Infrastructure Fund. And so here are just 3 examples of some of the most recent projects through the Regional Infrastructure. The Regional Infrastructure Fund has invested in. So the first one, as the screen was fritzing out a little bit, is the Maupin Broadband Project. This is a project identified through the RIF process in 2015. It's in the North Central region. Regional Infrastructure Fund added $410,000 in order to get this project seeded. And then from that, it has garnered a match of $2.5 million. This is delivering fiber to the home, to all these homes in Maupin, bringing modern-day technology to this small community in North Central. Not only was Regional Solutions part of it, private sector was part of it in a big way, and also the legislature enabling a series of investments to get it through to its last mile, with Representative Bonham being one of those key components and in key engagers within Regional Solutions to get that project completed. So these last 2 projects, the one in Southern Oregon is from the recent round in RIF. The last round for Regional Solutions in RIF was $4 million. And one of the projects that was invested in was in the city of Eagle Point. This is to restore the Butte Creek Mill and Ice House. This will lead to most of that mill burned to the ground except for the grindstones, and it's to bring that mill back in, to expand facilities for visitors and community uses, and will produce about 8 to 10 jobs coming back into that community. Again, a small amount of RIF investment went into it, match funds coming back to $2.5 million. And then a project in the South Valley Mid-Coast region, small investment of $250,000 in order to find a structural sound solution for the Big Creek Dam. This is a long-term project, but it's key for drinking water there along the coast for the city of Newport. And this has also led to a series of investments of match funds for $2.4 million. So those are just three different types of examples of how the RIF tool gets deployed in various parts of the state. You can see how it works with a small amount of regional solutions money, garnering a series of other matched funds, whether it be other state funds, federal funds, and private sector funds, or even philanthropic funds coming into the equation. So in summary, the RIF tool is a very valuable tool for regional solutions. With that being said, it's just one. And we have eligible entities, cities, counties, ports, special districts, and we're looking to add one other additional entity, which are the federally recognized tribes of Oregon, because they're a key component. When regional solutions is looking at that economy, we're looking at it from a regional perspective. All counties and cities and communities in it. And the Native American communities are an important component of that. And then, again, the high-level overview of regional solutions, I won't read that back to you, but it's really about taking that local expertise and guidance and solving problems in the community and economic development space. And the last slide, one of the key components of the entire program are the coordinators that are distributed all throughout the state. And here is a map. And you can see your coordinator and your part of Oregon. And if you do not know what they look like, I'm sure I embarrassingly put their photos up here. So I would receive grief when I get back home. So. One note, we have one interim position in the South Valley Mid-Coast, and that's Patrick Wingard there. And we're in the final rounds of getting a permanent replacement.
So could you explain to me, since these are federal regions, help me understand how they were set. So how did these economic regions, how did they set that versus what we might do in recognition of cross sectors or whatever it is that sets up these regions?
Sure, Lively, that's a good question. I know that those regions were set a while ago. I don't know the context of how they set them, but it's a good question that I can get back to you. And, I'm looking at Chris Cummings here to see.
I thought I would look at him too.
If he knew how the feds set those districts up.
I don't really. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Cummings. I'm assistant director at Business Oregon. And the simple answer is I don't recall either. How they were set, but we'll find out and get back to you.
Yeah, I've probably heard sometime, but I don't remember. But we have so many different things. We have regions here, and they tend to be different, and especially when it comes to economics and economic development. I was just curious how they could set it on our behalf without necessarily us having a better sense, but I would just appreciate the information. Other questions about this presentation? Representative Drazen.
Thank you, Chair. I have a couple of questions about how regional solutions, the RIF fund works. So how much money is in RIF right now? And I'm curious for these committees of five, or however many are on there, you said the language it was used was that they would recommend. So does that mean that they don't actually distribute the money? Is that go to some other authority to make that final determination?
Chair Lively, Representative, good question. The last round of funding that RIF received was $4 million. The previous biennium was approximately $22 million and then received a cut as the money was being deployed down to about $18 million. And I can, off the top of my head, I can't remember the previous round, but I think you can kind of see the arena there. The way that the funds are allocated, we have a set process for that, the way that we distributed the last $4 million. And recommendations come from each of the advisory committees, the 11 advisory committees across the state, received a number of applications, and they prioritized them, getting to their top three. And then each one of those regions, right, so 33 projects came into for the lack of a better term, super committee, which we called the Grant and Loan Review Committee. And then that Grant Loan Review Committee, which was made up of partners from Business Oregon's IFA, partners that have come from the some of the Regional Solutions Advisory Committees, in order to bring together which projects would be funded. And it was an extremely competitive process, as you can just imagine, 33 projects coming into the final round just for $4 million. And then that recommendation from the Grant Loan Review Committee was presented to the legislature, eBoard, in September, and then the legislature approved those projects prior to the bond sale this year.
Sure, go ahead.
So you said prior to the bond sale, and so the $4 million isn't general fund?
No. Chair Lively, Representative, the fund that, the money source for the RIF is lottery bond. That is the bond, the funding source for the RIF.
Thank you. So I'm trying to understand how the tribes, the addition of the tribes to the list of entities that are able to coordinate and bring in projects and forward them through this process. It sounds like that it's somewhat oversubscribed for the amount of money that's currently available. If you have 33 requests and only $4 million in the current, in the most recent round. So can you tell me in the past if the tribes have put a request through some of these other entities that are already eligible? Was there a problem? Did they not feel like they got their fair shake? Because right now it sounds like the tribes can still get money as long as they go through cities, counties, ports, or special districts to be a part of the mix. I'm trying to understand why we need to change that system, because they're already eligible like anyone else with that's within the economic development region to request these funds and to be a part of it. I don't see a basis to add them as their own entity, as a sovereign nation, when they can already seek funds through the existing entity. So I'm just trying to understand if they had concerns or complaints, or if there was some issue going on there.
Representative, great question. You are correct that they're able to still compete and win the investment from the state through the RIF. That they would have to partner with a local entity in order to do that. That has happened before. The Warm Springs Tribe partnered with the Central COG, Council of Governments, in order to be the sponsor for their project. One of the things that we have found through that is that it's not an easy process. It's a cumbersome process, an additional bureaucratic process in order to make that contractual relationship and going through the COG or through a public sponsor back into the Native American community. And we see it as an unnecessary bureaucratic step. That one of the entire premise of regional solutions is to make bureaucracy either aligned to make sure it works efficiently by bringing the power of bureaucracy, or to say, do we really need this step? Can't we just directly go and engage with this project? And I think we see the Senate Bill 219 as that engagement. As we've had experience with that project in the Warm Springs, it was called to our attention, hey, we're Native American communities are not eligible. It would just make it a heck of a lot easier in order to get this project up and going on the ground if we can directly allocate or be a directly be able to directly contract with that. And just for a point of clarification, this is not a set aside or a carve out of whether it had been the $4 million in the past or any kind of money that would come to the legislature or the Regional Solutions to the Future from the legislature. This is just in the spirit of Regional Solutions, making it just easier to get these projects done.
Last question, I promise. you and I talked briefly about the nature of state government, local governments, and their interactions with the sovereign nation, like the tribes. And I had asked the question, if we're going to have them in the mix with the rest of local governments, is there any other kind of parallel, similar relationship that exists anywhere else where we're eligible for funding from them? and we're viewed in as far as government to government, mm-hmm. access to their funds, access to our funds. How reciprocal is our relationship with the tribes in other categories? Or if you discovered any other examples that would help me give some context to this particular shift.
Sure, Chair Lively, Representative. Yeah, I did appreciate the question yesterday, and I did look into it. And I think there are multiple examples of where the Native American communities of Oregon are valuable economic development partners, and that intergovernmental relationship is key. So I'll give you two examples. One, I know that some of the Native American communities, I know the Grand Ronde the best, they have a philanthropic arm, and they have provided philanthropic dollars to various community projects. A good example of this would be in the city of Willamina for either a school project or a community meeting place where they have provided funds, and the state has also provided funds to that project, giving that to that. Now that project would either be owned locally or by the city or by a nonprofit. So another example of where Native American communities have been a stellar economic development partner for the state would be, another example from the Mid-Valley would be the Grand Ronde with their contribution for the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. The Newburgh-Dundee bypass, they provided a contribution into that fund in order to try to get that project funded either through federal and state funds. And that project, I'm not sure exactly if it's a state highway or a federal highway. I'm going to guess it has state jurisdiction with it, and that would be a good example of that reciprocal or co-investment or government-to-government relationship that I think the tribes do so viably across the state.
So I appreciate that. Thank you for clarifying with those examples. I think those are good examples. I think that the first one, though, would be a strong argument to not include them in this list, because clearly we do a lot of philanthropic stuff within Oregon that supports the tribe, and it sounds like from their philanthropic side, they do the same into our communities. I think that's mutually beneficial and very, very parallel. I like that. But the other one, I'd be curious whether or not the investments in the roads, that actually might be a legitimate, strong argument for their kind of general fund investment in something that would otherwise be a state function. So unless they use philanthropic dollars for that as well.
Chair Lively, Representative, I'm not sure exactly what the source of their $4 million was. Mm-hmm. I just know it was a key component that getting the entire Yamhill County and all its cities and jurisdiction in it all around in order to say, we need some congestion relief. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually one of the models in the Mid-Valley as a place where partners of all sorts have come together in order to make that investment.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm going to ask Mr. Mason to testify, and then maybe there'd be additional questions in that. But he's been sitting there listening to some of these questions, and he'd probably like to respond. But please.
Thanks. Well, thank you, Chairman Lively and members of the committee. My name is Michael Mason. I'm here on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon, and I'm mostly going to speak to their critically perilous situation, and on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of the Siletz Indians. And I want to thank the governor for putting forward this bill, and also, of course, you members of the committee for hearing it and hearing it promptly. So Senate Bill 219 at this moment is critically important to the Warm Springs. I don't know who listens to OPB when you have to do this, but there was a story this morning about EPA coming down hard on the Warm Springs, saying your water plant is done, it needs replacing. Well, they've been gearing up for that prospect, but it's a $40 million price tag. Now, the bulk of that will come from federal sources, but they'll need matching funds as well. And, you know, when EPA issues a notice like that, that's the end of economic development in that community. And in terms of, and just as they're planning to reopen Caneta, which you, all of us to our, I mean, I always almost went into despair when I heard about that closing. I mean, it's such a critical, recreational site for the region, and of course it's been around since 78. So I mean, I can trace my whole career at meetings at Kaneda, you know, and I think there are some state agency people who can say the same thing, but it's, anyway, it's apparently coming back, but who invests in a place that EPA has just said the water plant doesn't work? Nobody's gotten sick that I'm aware of, but, and granted, it needs work, but anyway, this is, there's also the sewage treatment plant, which is a problem, and the fact that water, the entire system failed in October. No one had water for a couple days, and some parts of the res for 4 days. And yes, you can bring in bottled water for a while, but if a fire happened at that time, and thank God it didn't, then what do you do? Because you don't have anything, you know, it's very hard to fight it except right next to the streams. And of course, we call in the planes too with the retardant. But so I don't know how to emphasize more than, I mean, with the Warm Springs situation, of course, that's a different situation to your question, Representative, about partnering. I think with a lot of the tribes, you're right. There's that partnering opportunity. Look at the Sillettes. I mean, their casino resort is right in Lincoln City. They're not going to come in by themselves and ask for this from Business Oregon or from the Regional Solutions team. They're going to partner. They have a very good relationship with Lincoln City, and they'll partner with them. I'd say the same thing for another client of mine, the Coquille Tribe. You know, the Mill Casinos right in North Bend. They're not going to do this by themselves. But Warm Springs is relatively isolated, and they don't have it, the water system is just there. Now, if I may, to the sovereign nations concept, that used to mean a lot more. When I started practicing Indian law, there. Now, this may sound odd, but the Bureau of Indian Affairs would not have hesitated, slow as they are in many ways, they would not have hesitated to step up on this water issue. The Indian Health Service would not have hesitated to step up on the sewage treatment issue in the 80s. That was not going to be a problem. The 90s, that was not going to be a problem. But gradually over time, the federal government has stepped back. Some of that works with tribes that have adequate revenue from modern sources, and some of it works for tribes that have adequate revenue from natural resources. Warm Springs doesn't have quite that much. I don't know where they would come up with $40 million. And that's just the water plant, not to mention the lines, not to mention the sewage treatment. So again, not to belabor it, but the matching funds are very important. And that's why we support this bill so strongly. I think it's without it, it's going to be very difficult to get those matching dollars, and it's almost like writing off an entire community that already has, you know, 65% poverty rate. So they don't like me to say those things. They don't like me. This is not something to brag about. They don't want it said, you know, how bad things are. But anyway, that's, I don't know how else to testify about it. But again, I thank you for hearing this, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to try to answer other questions.
Thank you. Representative McLean.
Well, I appreciate your comments, and I appreciate your frankness. And, you know, I'm happy to support this bill because, to me, we're dealing with a sovereign community that's part of our region and part of our community, and it gives us more tools to be a good neighbor, like we are with our other communities or other states or other folks that we do projects with. And so I appreciate the whole panel, because you have done such a good job of laying out what your program is, what the goals are, what the structures are, and what the partnership is. And I think that one of the very strong aspects of this program is actually the matching. And I think everybody should have an opportunity to get that matching from the folks, you know, that are looking for projects to be supported on. But I just appreciate what you folks had to say today, and I appreciate your time.
Other questions or comments? Representative Wallen.
Thank you. Okay, this is an unsolicited comment, but I wish the EPA cared about the health impacts from forest fire smoke the way they seem to care about Warm Springs water. And if the EPA is listening, I wish they would hear that. This is a question for about the regional solutions. Where would I find the list of the committee members of the different regional solutions committees?
Chair Lively, Representative, we have a regional solution that has a website, and on that website, it has each of the regions identified and the coordinators and the committee members and teams. Okay. I also have a copy of that, and so at the end of this meeting, gladly present you a paper copy with that.
Just Google it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Marsh.
I don't want to let the opportunity go by without plugging regional solutions. I've worked with staff in my region, a couple of different people over a period of time, and it's just such an effective on-the-ground opportunity to bring together disparate partners to really put a coordinated effort focused on a project that is significant within our communities. I think it's one of the best things that we spend money on under the rubric of economic development. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazen's questions sort of got me thinking about what I think maybe one of the things that you were getting at is, on the one hand, we have a process now by which the tribes are forced to partner with other entities. And if there was an intent to do that, to provide more fiscal responsibility, more transparency, more ability to audit, then that might be a reason to leave the system the way it is. But my question is, does doing it so in that fashion actually provide those safeguards, or will the same safeguards be implemented if we allow the tribes to access the funds directly? So in other words, is the money in the process going to be protected in the same way in any case?
Chair Lively, Representative, again, Chris Cummings with Business Oregon. This would be no different from how we manage cities and counties and ports, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We actually put a lot of effort into ensuring that projects are completed and funded properly. All of these projects, as well as our other projects, are reimbursement basis, so they don't get the money and then not build the project. Okay. This change, actually, just to touch a little bit on that, is partly to make it consistent with all of our other programs, or most of our other programs, I should say, in that tribes are eligible as direct recipients of those programs, and we manage those funds perfectly well, and ensure that the tribes, as well as cities and counties, complete their projects.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's helpful.
And just thank you, Chair. Just to follow up on that, our projects particularly ranked well if they demonstrate partnership with multiple entities? I mean, when you actually go to judging those 33 projects and winnowing them down to the ones that are chosen, does collaboration count?
Chair Lively, Representative, yes, we have a term for that, community support, right? So when we look at that, we're looking at not only dollars leveraged by the community and saying, okay, hey, they have, they have a skin in the game, right? They have X amount of money, and then, hey, that money's coming from the local philanthropic organization, it's coming from the school district, it's coming from a local business, it's coming, so absolutely that really demonstrates not only the money amounts, but then the different types of players coming in as, answering the question, does the project have community buy-in?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great.
Thank you, Chair. So you just made me have one more question when I told the Chair I wouldn't have any more. And that is that you said that this aligns this particular regional solutions fund with how you operate in other funds. So what other funds are tribes currently eligible like any other local government? Do we in fact not treat them like a sovereign nation generally? Are they viewed as a subset of government operationally for the state of Oregon?
Chair Lively, Representative, I can't necessarily answer for the policy of the state on that. We have programs such as our Special Public Works Fund, which is our flagship infrastructure fund, our Brownfields Fund, and other funds that specifically call out in legislation, in statutes, that tribes are an eligible entity. And that's primarily how we got to, in the beginning, to this request, at the behest of the tribes and us seeing that that was perhaps an oversight in the original approval of RIF.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Doesn't look like it. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
You bet. So I'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 219A in committee, just to announce. So we're not going to meet Monday, based on there may be lots of business on the floor in that between tomorrow and that we need to get through. So we don't have any pressing business, but we at this point will plan to start meeting again next Wednesday. Any further business?